Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Fiddler, Tristan Fiddler.
And I'm Murato, Simon Murato.
I don't know, does either have the same rig as Bond, James Bond? But that's what we're going with as an opening salvo to this new episode of the Movie Squad podcast, which is our weekly edition of Movie Chat every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on Breakfast with Taylor on RTRFM 92.1. And yeah, we have two films to discuss, or that we did discuss, and one of them is the latest new James Bond film starring Daniel Craig in his last role.
That's right, the last of the Daniel Craig entries. Mm. Who knows who will take over the spot after him. I know that Taylor has put a... she has thrown Coleman Domingo's hat in the ring, which I thought was an interesting
That's
submission.
A good one, yeah.
And I have no preference. I think it needs to be a nobody.
Yeah, that would be good. Like, you know, let's go back to the kind of discovery of a new star, George Lazenby style, you know. Mm. So yeah, well, we get to get into it about No Time to Die, and we also look at a new film from Jane Campion, the director, that is a Netflix original film but is out in cinemas at the time of recording, The Power of the Dog, starring Benedict Cumberbatch. Do you think he would have made a good Bond?
Oh, look. No. And that's no disrespect, but, you know, same with Tom Hiddleston, same with... There's just a generation of guys that, you know, this is the reason why Daniel Craig's still doing it in his 50s, basically. They just... It's more about keeping others out of the role, I think, than finding someone new. But, look, Benedict Cumberbatch, I'm excited to see him in this new film. But first, we go to Bond.
James, fate draws us back together. Your enemy is my enemy.
His name is Seffin.
And what does he want?
Revenge. Me.
When her secret finds its way out, it'll be the death of you.
You can imagine why I've come back to play.
There's a young lady in Santiago I want you to meet.
You're late.
When you're ready.
It is Friday morning, the Movie Squad back in action this week. Tristan and Simon, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hope you're both doing well. It's going to be warm this weekend, but dare I say warmer on the screen. Simon, let's start with the film that we've all been waiting for. Talking Bond, baby.
Oh, it's sizzling on the cinema screens this weekend. That's right. No Time to Die, the latest Bond film, the fifth and final feature starring Daniel Craig as 007, as has been widely promoted. It's an interesting one because obviously over the last 2 years, we've been, you know, repeating ad nauseum, this film was delayed because of COVID or this film was sent to streaming. But we shouldn't forget that No Time to Die was actually the first movie off the blocks. Last March or whenever it was, last February perhaps even, they made the call, the distributor, to delay it. And it was pushed and pushed and pushed and they held their nerve to November 2021. It was opened in the UK and the US a couple of months ago. But we've got it now in Australian cinemas because they wanted us to enjoy it on the big screen. And that's the only place you can see it. Now, as I mentioned, it's the fifth entry in the Daniel Craig era of Bond movies. And I think now that we've seen the story come to an end, or we've seen all five of the films, I personally feel that Casino Royale stands tallest among them. But also, as objectively as you can say about films and art, I think it's the best Bond movie. I mean, I don't know how you watch that movie and then put it up against... you know, Thunderball or some of these others, as good as you know, Goldfinger are. You know, Tristan, how do you feel about the Bond movies, but also the Daniel Craig series?
Well, I'm not really a Bond head, but, you know, I've seen a few over time, and I've only seen each of these Daniel Craig films once, and yeah, I think Casino Royale has good memories. Skyfall, I saw quite late to the hype and quite liked. And, you know, I like Daniel Craig. I think he's good. I mean, the thing about this series, and I'm sure we'll talk about this with this this new one and the last one, is that in a rare moment, these films kind kind of all connect together, which usually Bond movies are standalone endeavors, which tested my memory a little bit. I've only seen these films once, and sometimes you go in just waiting for the, you know, the plot to start, the villain to be introduced, and here you're like, oh, do you remember what happens, Inspector? I was like, oh, I think I fell asleep halfway through. But
and it was 6 years ago. It's not like Marvel movies where it's the following year or 6 months later.
So, look, I wasn't like chomping at the bit for it to be released, but I was looking forward to seeing it and seeing what this last one will bring. I mean, Taylor, are you a Bond head? Do you like Daniel Craig?
Yeah, look, I wouldn't say I'm a Bond head, but I've definitely been subject to watching almost all Bond films through no fault of anybody's, but definitely my granddad, who is a huge Bond head, from the very, very beginning to now. In saying that, I don't know how he feels about like a blonde Bond, because that was the whole thing when Daniel Craig was announced, right? I have seen most of them. I've seen all the Daniel Craig ones. I actually recently rewatched Casino Royale just to rejig my memory, and I enjoyed it. I've been looking forward to this. I don't think I've been like devastated every time it's been set back, though.
Yeah, exactly, because I think you kind of know what you're getting from a Bond movie, and certainly five movies in over 15 years, you know what you're getting from a Daniel Craig Bond movie, and that's not a bad thing. But it's not like you were waiting for the stunning resolution to the Spectre series. And I remember being so annoyed during Spectre, which was the last film in 2015, that it was so heavily reliant on you remembering elements of Quantum of Solace, which is the worst of the series that I completely eradicated from my memory. But No Time to Die, it's the fifth one, and as you say, it does tie a ribbon around everything. It does is very upfront about the fact that this has been an ongoing series. There are connections to all the other films, and I think I was more at peace with it this time around than I have been in previous entries. But it does begin with Bond and Madeleine Swann, who's played by Léa Seydoux from the previous film. They're enjoying retirement, effectively, in Italy on the coast. They've vanquished their enemies, as far as they're aware, and are ready for a life of lovemaking and whatever else you do when you retire on the coast of Italy. But of course, the crime syndicate known as Spectre rears its head once again and attacks Bond. And it's unfortunate because Madeleine Swann was also affiliated with Spectre. And so he becomes distrustful of her, and he goes into hiding for 5 years, but is pulled out, summoned back into action, not by MI6, but by the CIA and Felix Leiter, his American mate, played by Jeffrey Wright. And that puts them on the path of hunting down this very strange and frankly confusing biological weapon, and also puts them face to face once again with Blofeld, played by Christoph Waltz, and a new villain whose name I didn't understand while they were saying it during the movie, and I neglected to look up because I didn't care enough, but is played by Rami Malek in what is becoming a trademark bad Rami Malek performance. Now, Tristan, Rami Malek, people know him from Mr. Robot, and I enjoyed him in Mr. Robot before I stopped watching it. But Bohemian Rhapsody, The Little Things, I think we know what we get from Rami Malek now, and I'm not a fan of it. I know your lovely partner, Sally, has strong feelings on this topic as well.
Yeah, her line was, no time to die, no time for Rami Malek. And I was, you know, into him. I never saw Mr. Robot, but, you know, when he popped up in things, I thought he was an interesting actor.
He's in The Master.
Yes, and but here, particularly with this character, and, you know, the villain is always a big, strong part. You mentioned Casino Royale, Mads Mikkelsen, what a performance. What a guy. And then with Rami Malek, it's hard to compare, and it does fall into an unfortunate trend that the recent Bond films have with the villains having some kind of facial disfigurement, which, you know, people have kind of said is kind of a bit old school and not appropriate anymore. And then his character is strange because there's a bit of a question about how old he actually is, because there is a prologue that takes place when Madeleine Swann is a young girl and he's involved, and then he kind of looks the same even though it's 20 years later. So
he is also like an old, like, he looks quite boyish, Rami Malek, in general, but he's in his 40s, and so I was actually doing the mental gymnastics in my head during that sequence and going, I guess it works out.
But yeah, and then he's also kind of delivered late into the film because this film, you know, look, I liked it. I enjoyed it. It is very long. It is 2 hours and 50 minutes. It has a series of kind of false starts before it really gets into the thing. So he only gets introduced like halfway through. We're still dealing with Spectre and Christoph Waltz. So yeah, look, he really sunk the film a little bit for me. He was not that enjoyable, but there is a large cast, including some new people involved, some you know, agents that we're introduced to, including Lashana Lynch as the kind of new 007 because James Bond's retired, and Ana de Armas from Knives Out, and I think she contributes probably the scene-stealing performance of the film.
She's great. She's so funny.
Yeah. But it is a bit weird that her character, it could almost be like separated out from the film. That's how like stuffed this movie is. I mean, did you like this film?
I actually did like it a lot. I think it's the most fun I've had with a Bond movie since Casino Royale. And again, Casino Royale for me sits on a pedestal. I mean, that movie has Mads Mikkelsen with a rope, you know, a knotted rope, basically tickling a naked Daniel Craig's balls. And I don't know how you top that after five movies. But even Skyfall, which I think is the most striking looking of the Bond movies, I had some problems with. This time around, even with the crummy main villain, it was just such a pleasure to watch some big action sequences from director Kari Joji Fukunaga, who has made movies like Sin Nombre and Beasts of No Nation, but is probably best known for True Detective Season 1. He has some great set pieces, and Daniel Craig is just so good in this role. I mean, we really, you know, that's the fun of this big send-off, and that's what it is for Bond. It's sort of like going, thank you, Daniel Craig, because he's been such a welcome addition. And I think if you've enjoyed his performances, you'll really like No Time to Die.
It's interesting. I was listening to an interview with Barbara Broccoli, who's one of the producers of this film, and she did make the point of saying this entire film centres around celebrating Daniel Craig and, like, giving him all the big hero parts. So it was, like, as much a film as, like, it is in the Bond franchise, it was more just, like, let's just celebrate and send off Daniel Craig into the sunset film.
And I think that was quite nice because Bond, like, you know, a lot of superhero films, certainly the Batman movies, and this has been a criticism of the Batman films, which is, you know, Batman becomes sort of a side character and it's all about the villain. Who's the villain this time? Oh, the villain.
I don't think that's the issue here. With
I don't think anyone will even remember that there was a villain in this Bond movie. He's quite a forgettable character, despite a really great sort of entrance into the movie at the very first scene. But this is all about Daniel Craig himself. And, you know, he's suave, he's charming, he's everything you want Bond to be. Do we still need a Bond? Do we still need this kind of Bond? That argument, you know, we can have that when they choose the next one. But for now, I was happy to sit there for 3 hours, which, you know me, that is saying something significant, to just spend it with this character who's basically in every scene.
All right, I haven't seen it yet, but I am heading this Saturday, this Saturday evening, tomorrow night, to go and see it with my parents, both big Bond fans. My dad's a huge Bond fan, so looking forward to that. My mum has just sent me a message saying, holy something, 3 hours is long, so sit tight, mum, we're in for a ride.
I am going to, Mistrana, I'm going to text you privately the perfect bathroom break for this Bond movie.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. Looking forward to it. If you are also heading out to see the new Bond film, if you're going to see No Time to Die, the final send-off for Daniel Craig, do get in touch, 0405 921 921. Movie Squad Part 2 is back in just a moment.
He's just a man. Only another man.
It's 7:45 on RTRFM this morning, and we are going to tell you all about that song in just a moment. But before we do, you're listening to Movie Squad. Tristan and Simon here. We've just handed down some information about the last Daniel Craig Bond film, No Time to Die, and the text line has gone off, folks.
That usually concerns me.
It's actually not all bad. There's a rogue text here that we usually get when we talk about Bond. Someone just wrote, Pierce Brosnan is the only Bond.
Well, wow, what an interesting perspective.
GoldenEye was my vintage. That's the one I went to see in the cinema, so I'll always have a candle
you'll
for
Brosnan. You'll have a candle. I don't think you're the only person. Somebody else has said, hey, Taylor, heading to watch Bond on Tuesday. If Simon could please share the bathroom break point publicly, okay, that would be appreciated. Drinks first may necessitate a break.
All right, I did tell Taylor off the air. It's not a spoiler. Okay, you want to know when to go to the bathroom? Almost exactly halfway through the movie,
okay,
Rami Malek reemerges.
Okay.
Okay? It's a sit-down scene with another character. You don't need it. Get out of there. You don't want to see what he's doing.
No action,
it's not
stunts.
No, there's no plot progression. I mean, you kind of you get what's going on. I reckon you got 4 minutes solid. So,
that's fabulous.
Yeah, there's a 4 minute period in Bond that you can safely escape.
There's a mass walkout now. I'm Simon Morato.
I would love that.
And finally, Elizabeth says, I love movie squads so much. Thank you, folks. And definitely going to see the Bond movie now after hearing these insights.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Always nice to hear from you. It's Movie Squad. Tristan, before we get stuck into the second film, what was the piece of music we just heard?
Well, it's called 25 Years and it's by Johnny Greenwood. People know him from Radiohead. But he's also a great composer of film scores. And this is the score that he's done for the film I'm talking about, The Power of the Dog, which is a film directed by Jane Campion and starring Benedict Cumberbatch. It's out in cinemas now and it'll be coming. It's a Netflix film as well. So we get this weird window where we can see it in the cinemas, but then it'll be on Netflix in December, I believe. But yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch. I mean, you know, we've gone from Daniel Craig to another great British thespian. You know, what's your temperature on Benedict Cumberbatch, Simon?
Look, I like him. I think he is definitely, he's been miscast a lot.
Mm.
And I think he has a lot of great skill as an actor. And, you know, it's even something like The Imitation Game, if that movie works at all, and it's a very, you know, sort of middle of the road kind of, you know, biopic, it works because of him.
Mm.
So I'm really intrigued by this movie in particular, because I think it's a different performance or a different type of character that we've maybe ever seen him play.
Hmm. I mean, Taylor, were you a Sherlock fan at all? Or
I'm not going to lie. The only time that I've watched Benedict Cumberbatch is as Dr. Stephen Strange.
Yes.
Of course.
That's it.
I mean, and I liked him in that. I liked that film. Sometimes I find his American accents quite, you know, you can just see through it like very easily.
Sure.
But he's playing an American in this film, and I didn't notice that at all. So I think this is, you know, the mark of a really good performance, or the moment where I became quite impressed by Benedict Cumberbatch. And, you know, the thing that piqued my interest was, directed by Jane Campion, the director of The Piano, Holy Smoke, In the Cut, and who hasn't really made a film in a while. The last kind of project that she worked on was the Top of the Lake series with Elizabeth Moss that was two seasons. And returning to directing a film, it's based on a novel from the 1960s called The Power of the Dog by an author that I don't really know called Thomas Savage. And it's set in Montana in the 1920s, and it's basically a Western drama. It's about two brothers who are cattle ranchers. We get Phil, who's very intense and caustic, and he's played by Benedict Cumberbatch. And he's got a softer brother, George, played by Jesse Plemons. And they just have this relationship where they've been working together all their life. They sleep together in the same bed. Just, you know, there's nothing kind of weird about it. It's just, that's what they do.
Stuff, yeah.
Back in the day. But Benedict Cumberbatch's character is quite kind of cruel. He calls his brother Fatso in front of the ranch hands. He seems to kind of despise his softness, but he also can't seem to live without him. And he gets really kind of annoyed when Jesse Plemons' character starts to look elsewhere for companionship. They stop off one time during a cattle drive at a hotel restaurant run by a widow named Rose, played by Kirsten Dunst. And so Jesse Plemons' character takes a shine to her, starts to make motions to kind of marry her. But she also has a son, a teenage son, a gawky, thin, unusual son, played by Cody Smith McPhee. And he's someone that when Benedict Cumberbatch's character sees him, he's just like immediately targeting him as another kind of thing that he can make fun of, that he can call a Nancy, that he can kind of make fun of in front of his men. So it's a very kind of tense environment, and it's basically a four-hander with these characters as they sort of live together in this property, which is a ranch, which is kind of in this kind of darkened mansion with all these cattle. But as the movie goes on, it slowly reveals things about the characters and allows for a lot of different kind of interpretations of them, particularly with Benedict Cumberbatch's character, who seems the most kind of just threatening, but has layers to him and his interest and relationship with this kind of pale, gawky kind of young man develops kind of, you know, it speaks to some hidden parts about himself, which relate to maybe a frustrated sense about his own sexuality and the way that he can't express it because he's playing this Western character. So this is a film basically about toxic masculinity. But I really liked this film. I thought it was great. Like the score by Johnny Greenwood and the performance by Benedict Cumberbatch and the Western setting might make you think of There Will Be Blood, and I think that's it's an interesting comparison. But it's not as strident and like totalitarian as that film is. So look, I know you haven't seen this, Simon, but was there anything when you kind of read about this or heard about it, what was kind of drawing you to it?
Well, I have to admit, when I first heard about it, I wasn't drawn to it. I had
really
a lot of disinterest, you know, like, oh, it's a Western, it's an adaptation of this book from yonks ago. Not that that's a, you know, I'm not that. But what I mean is, like, there was nothing really. The Power of the Dog as a title, I think, is more intriguing in the context of you know, seeing the artwork for it. But I was like, okay, whatever. And now I'm so excited to see it because the word has been so positive on this film. And, yeah, all this talent assembling. Jesse Plemons is so great. Benedict Cumberbatch in a role that suits him. And Jane Campion, of course. As I confided and maybe even confessed to you off air, I've never seen The Piano. It is one of those movies that I just never got around to. But I really want to watch it before seeing this film. And, yeah, I think the way that this movie, that I'm hearing you say it approaches these topics, I think is really fascinating, and I'm just really excited to see what is apparently four great performances in a beautifully made film.
Yeah, it's got a gothic drama vibe. I mean, Cody... Smith McPhee, thank you. You know, he's kind of... It almost seems like he's a character from a Nick Cave song or something like that, and there's a kind of weird vibe where you're not sure where characters are coming from and what they're going to do, so it always kind of surprises you a little bit. But, yeah, I don't know, Taylor, like, you know, I know that Doctor Strange, the second one, I'm sure you'll be first in line for, but like a Western like this, I mean, what does it take for you to think, oh, I might want to see that?
Do you know, it's like such a weird week of like films my granddad's into, because the only other reason that I've seen Western films is because of him, which I'm sure is like the case for a lot of people. They see films by proxy because of people around them. I'm interested in it. It's not obviously the first thing that I would be drawn to. I've just had a bit of a look through some of the stills from the film, though, and Benedict Cumberbatch looks like just an old-timey mean guy, and I don't know if that's like an accurate... he obviously is playing the villain in this film, but like he really does look the part.
Well, it's a very interesting poster as well, because the poster is just his back, which I think is at first, and that's probably one of the things where I was like, oh, okay, well, that's not really very interesting. But now understanding the larger context around what the movie is, I think is such an imposing, you know, and there's so much hidden in that poster that I'm like, I gotta see this thing.
Yeah, look, this is a Western, but it's definitely in line with old Westerns like Days of Heaven or McCabe and Mr. Midler. This is not like John Wayne shoot 'em up time. This is like a Western that is kind of picking apart some of the masculine myths of, and you know, it's from a film, from a book from the 60s, and so it's already kind of toying with this idea of the kind of the American man, and you see Benedict Cumberbatch's character, and he's striding with like lots of, he's like the cock of the walk, but then, you know, he's wearing these chaps as well that kind of deflates him a little bit. Like it's a really unusual film. It's out in cinemas now. It'll be on Netflix for everyone to see if you have access to it in December, but it's definitely one that I was struck by subtly and that I would recommend people to go check it out to cinemas rather than waiting for Netflix.
Oh, interesting. Let us know if this has caught your attention. 0405 921 921. Tristan and Simon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Did you know we have like 5 episodes of Movie Squad left for this year? One of them being the best of the year, the other being like a holiday preview. So really, we've got like 3 episodes left, 6 films to review.
Yes. Tristan and I, over the last couple of weeks, have already been trying to pick and choose what we're going to cover, what are we preferencing. I've already put my hand up for a very interesting film called Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn. I said, we've got to get that in there. I don't care what big releases are there. And then the algorithm. We've got to feed all our favourite films into the magic algorithm that spits out our top 10. So I'm very interested to see what comes out on top.
I'm so glad that I'm not part of any of that decision making. Movie Squad back on your radio next Friday morning. And of course, play catch up with the Movie Squad podcast, available wherever it is that you get your podcast from.
So there you have it, our discussion of two new movies out in the cinemas, but I'm sure that can be enjoyed later on, however you see fit. We've got, you know, globe-trotting spy action and then down-home ranch drama tension to satisfy every, you know, conceivable movie taste.
Yes, and certainly Taylor's grandpa.
Yes, well, definitely, yeah. It's like I liked hearing that because it definitely seems that James Bond is the gateway from, you know, grandfathers or fathers. It's the classic dad movie,
yeah.
I think.
Like, it's... This is a terrible pun, and I wish it didn't have to be this way, but it's a bonding exercise, you know? And I like that Taylor in particular, you know, because it doesn't have to be sons and their fathers and their grandfathers.
No.
Like, it's about, you know, generations. That's what brings families together. It's about the generations of Bond uniting.
And ranking who was the best. So there you go. So we should also say, yeah, so we are back this year with weekly editions of the Movie Squad podcast, but we're also doing some special episodes. And so the previous episode, or one that's in the stream, is an interview that I did with the Black Maria Film Collective. They're a crew of young people who've started doing film screenings over the past couple of years, and they're very excited about movies, film culture, and sharing weird, strange exploitation cinema with everyone out there in Perth. So do check that one out, and we'll have some more. Please.
I was going to say about the Black Maria Film Collective, a great way to see films that you just can't see any other way, realistically, in Australia.
No, you probably would have been able to see them for $2 on an ex-rental VHS, like, bin, but now you get to see them in, like, remastered glory from different labels across the world, including Vinegar Syndrome, who we talk about. So, yeah, please check that out, just to hear about, you know, people being excited about movies. And we'll have some more special kind of episodes of the Movie Squad podcast coming out later this month as well.